structurally strong and acts as a natural insulator due to the air pockets within its cellular structure. The family's sand clock was also interesting to see. Ms. Eftekhari explained to me that as the sun moves across the sky, the shadow aligns with different hour lines which are marked on the dial to indicate the time of the day. Every nook and corner of the house was also filled with different wooden sculptures, and as we understood, Abbas Eftekhari has a hand in sculpting too.
It's a dreamy experience, rubbing your hands on the different shapes of wood and smelling the woody fragrance and looking at the colourful, delicate veins as they each tell you their life story.
We live in a world constantly surrounded by technology. Maybe it's about time we got in touch with Mother Nature, becoming environmentally aware and reconnecting with the energy of the universe. Hoda Lezgi for Iran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. In Islam, the ink of the scholar is more holy than the blood of the martyr. There are an estimated 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, which is about 1.5% of the world's population. Due to the birth and conversion rates, Islam is considered to be the fastest growing religion in the world today. We start off this hour's programs with A to Z of Life. This program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Next up will be our radio productions feature. They will be followed by The Key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shiite topics. Stay with us for this hour.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Raising Good People. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab, and obviously Raising Good People. Raising Good People is something that obviously in Islam we do both as parents, educators do this, or teachers, university professors. But in a sense, we're meant to be doing this, no matter what our status is, no matter what our role is in society, because really, how do we raise good people? So we raise good people, in a sense, by ourselves being good, because people, everyone will be, you know, we all look at each other. We all observe each other. So if we are observing someone else with good behavior, that has an impact on us. So that can help us to be raised as good people. And the other way of obviously raising people is to actually give specific instructions, advice, and guidance. So that's two aspects. I'm just going to first refer to a particular sorts of behaviours in the life of one of the most famous martyrs from Lahore Defence, Dr. Mustafa Chamoghan. So it said again and again that his personality had very special effects on people around him. So for example, there was actually a group that came from Lebanon to fight with Dr. Chamoghan in Iran during the Lahore Defence. And it said that they all became martyrs and nobody even found out who they were. But it said, what is said about this particular group is they were just as humble as Dr. Chamoghan, and they were fighting only for the sake of God and duty. And then the comment that is added to that is that this is something that was happening with the people who sort of came and joined Dr. Chamoghan in whatever situation, whether this was fighting, whether this was working with him, that he was actually raising people like that. So people who, for example, were told, even if they were totally unknown, but they were indebted to God. Welcome back to A to Z here on R&B English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously I'm talking about this idea of raising good people and how we raise good people. And obviously I've mentioned we can raise good people by being the best we can be, because, you know, we learn from observing others. And then the second way is to actually make, instruct, advise and guide through words, for example, as well. And I've mentioned the example of Dr. Chamoghan, who in everything he did basically seemed to raise good people in many different ways. And obviously, so what's the lesson that we take from this? And obviously we, our martyrs, you know, obviously these, they have very high ranks. And obviously I'll just say again, we cannot ever think of our martyrs as dead. They are truly alive. And many people will actually say this, for especially the families of martyrs, they do even feel the presence of the martyrs. So be aware of that, that the martyrs are even if you visited them at their gravesites, they are very much amongst us. And people even ask them for help. So the lesson is, so what do we do? So what can, how can we follow this example of these sort of martyrs and trying to raise good people? And obviously I've mentioned that we need to also, first of all, focus on what we are doing. Because in a sense, and the suspicion is some of these, many of our martyrs, they did not even necessarily give specific guidance. People were going to them and just watching them, just being in their company, and that was already changing them. So rather than, because obviously our tendency is, you know, we want to open our mouths and we want to speak and we want to say, and maybe we say it really beautifully, but is it really that important to always tell people, do this and do that? Maybe we can also guide just through being the best kind of person we can be. And obviously there is people who manage to purify themselves, really focus on getting rid of flaws in their character. You know, they do say that there is a special light, and people, if you manage to do that, other people will be drawn to you and they will gain huge benefit from being around you. So let's maybe just focus on that. Let's just focus on polishing, training our own character, first of all. So inshallah, these are, let's say, insights, reminders for all of us. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on RB English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
المصطفى الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام. Story to the divine. Free yourself and say what's true. Be yourself though you may be few.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Al-Kiram.
You can see straight into my soul. You know in hardship I changed my goals. Now I realize I was so unwise. Abandoned your advice,
faced with your pride.
Help was always near if we persevered.
If we held up
just for a while.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Al-Kiram.
My life is empty without you. Nothing I've gained is without you. If you are pleased, my soul can breathe. Where would I be without you? My heart now flees these worldly dreams, yearning for mercy from you. Now I realize I was so unwise. Abandoned your advice,
faced with your pride.
Help was always near if we persevered.
If we held up
just for a while.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba.
On September 17, 2024, in towns across southern Lebanon and in parts of Syria, a new kind of terror was unleashed. At around 3:30 in the afternoon, small black pagers began exploding inside homes, markets, and schools.
In Lebanon, at least 12 people were killed, over 2,800 injured Tuesday, when electronic pagers used by members of Hezbollah exploded at the same time.
Playing out hundreds of times across Lebanon within the space of an hour, a targeted, coordinated, highly technical attack.
And hospitals struggling with an influx of more than 3,000 injured people.
The next day, it was walkie-talkies.
Dozens of radios exploded earlier today.
Walkie-talkies explode throughout Lebanon over the course of 2 days.
What followed was a two-month Israeli bombardment campaign. Thousands were killed. A fifth of Lebanon's population displaced. and the community, seen as the backbone of Hezbollah, the Shia population of southern Lebanon, was bombed, hunted, and left to bury its dead. Israel was trying to deter Hezbollah from intervening against the genocide in Gaza. Later, it would be revealed that the pagers were booby-trapped, sold to Hezbollah by a front company tied to the Mossad, Israel's intelligence agency. The Israelis named the operation Grim Reaper. They claimed they were targeting fighters, but these are the people who paid the price. We're leaving Berish, a village in South Lebanon. We were just visiting Ali, one of the victims of the pager attacks, and we're on our way to Dibba, another village, to visit Hussein, who's also a victim. He's 12 years old of the pager attacks. These kids, their lives have been completely upended. Lots of facial disfiguration. They've lost fingers. Many of them can't see. So yeah, it's quite heavy stuff.
As a doctor, somehow you are trained to dissociate yourself from this compassion with the patient, but it fails many times. When you see your young people coming to you, this is the future of your country. Perhaps your kids, your neighbor, your parents, you see them. It's very hard to dissociate yourself. They were part of my Lebanon, my dream. And taking care of them, I'm reconstructing, rebuilding my country.
Ali and Hussein are more than survivors. They're friends, and in each other, they find a reflection of what they've lost and what they still have. The Israelis insist they were targeting fighters. So why were so many civilians, including children, among the injured? Zainab Mistra was injured by a pager at her parents' house in the southern suburbs of Beirut. Human rights lawyer Craig McIver says the attacks on Lebanese civilians were no accident.
Many of those who were victimized by these attacks were civilians, were women and children, medical workers and others. And even some of those who were targeted were not combatants. They may have been affiliated with Hezbollah, but mere affiliation with a political organization does not make someone a legitimate target under international law.
Sheikh Mustafa Shaib, a religious scholar, was also badly injured in the attack.
All of it was a part of a campaign of terror against certain parts of the Lebanese population for a political purpose. So it clearly meets the general understanding of what terrorism is. It constitutes an act of aggression.
We're in Burj Rahal in South Lebanon, and we're heading to Sheikh Mustafa's house, where he lives with his wife and two young daughters. Sheikh Mustafa is a teacher, a father, and a scholar. He isn't a fighter. But on September 17, 2024, a pager exploded in his hands. Now he's blind. Sheikh Mustafa teaches at a religious school in South Lebanon that's affiliated with the political wing of Hezbollah. Hezbollah was formed in the early 1980s to resist Israel's invasion and occupation of Lebanon. It liberated the South in 2000 and beat back another Israeli invasion in 2006. After that humiliation, Israel began planning the next round. The pager attack was part of that plan. Like other Lebanese political parties, Hezbollah runs schools, clinics, and infrastructure for the constituency that voted them into parliament. The pagers were a basic tool, a secure means of communication across the community, until Israel turned them into weapons, weapons that turned people into bombs. The blast left him completely blind. His face was torn apart. He's undergone dozens of surgeries. When he got prosthetic eyes, his daughters thought he could see again. He had to explain that he couldn't. Israel's pager attack was practically celebrated across the West. The media called it sophisticated. American officials hailed it as precise and targeted.
Wolf, indeed, the Mossad has a long, fascinating history of using methods like this, the latest in a long line of audacious, lethal, sometimes high-tech operations by the legendary Israeli intelligence agency, Mossad.
The Israelis are the best.
Today they look like James Bond, carrying out an attack
in Lebanon,
targeting and eliminating membership and leadership of Hezbollah. I absolutely support that. And in fact, if anything, I love it.
Israeli leaders and their supporters take pride in the attack and have often turned it into a joke, handing out pager trophies to political allies and threatening to use pagers against their adversaries while mocking victims as their bodies undergo surgery after surgery.
I'm a supporter of the Palestinians, so I'm used to it.
Yeah, I'm hoping your beeper doesn't go off. The thing is
that... Did you just say I should die?
Beep, beep.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett joked that he planned to pass out pagers to students protesting his appearance at Harvard University. Supporters of Israel joked about giving a pager to Mahmoud Khalil's newborn baby after he was detained by ICE over his opposition to the genocide in Gaza. The Mossad agents who engineered the attack were praised as national heroes in Israel and given airtime in Western media to justify it.
That although it's ugly, it has character.
And yet if you were to tune in to the broadcast of the media corporations in the United States or listen to American politicians, you would think that Israel had achieved something great, that it was some sort of precision strike against the bad guys, when in fact, it was an atrocity.
Craig McIver is the former director of the New York office of the UN Commissioner for Human Rights. He resigned in October 2023 in protest of the UN's failure to stop Israel's genocide in Gaza. While Western media celebrated the attack, Craig had a different name for it.
But what we saw with the use of these pagers was a clear and gross violation of international law. It could certainly be defined as terrorism because it was intended to spread terror across the population in Lebanon.
Even former CIA Director Leon Panetta framed it the same way.
Is it terrorism?
I don't think there's any question that it's a form of terrorism.
Under international law, the pager attack checks nearly every box for illegality.
The booby trapping of ordinary civilian devices is prohibited in all circumstances. That is a war crime in and of itself. It doesn't meet the test of international humanitarian law of the principle of distinction, that is, being able to distinguish between combatants and non-combatants. It is a violation of the principle of precaution. It also is a violation of international human rights law that prohibits arbitrary, summary, or extrajudicial executions.
And even if Israel's claims were true, that all the pagers belonged to Hezbollah fighters, Craig says the attack would still be a war crime.
Neither can they claim that some of those who were killed were victims of so-called collateral damage. A child who was killed by an exploding pager is not the victim of collateral damage. They are the victim of a war crime.
For the victims, there's no confusion about who helped and who harmed. While the U.S. sent weapons and shielded Israel diplomatically, Iran sent doctors, planes, and medical care free of charge. The attack's cruelty extended beyond the initial blast. Lebanese MP Ilyas Jradi, an ophthalmologist who treated many of the victims, described what followed as a corneal siege, an effort to prevent Hezbollah members and their communities from accessing critical eye surgeries. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Israel pressured the Lebanese government to ban Iranian planes from landing in Beirut, making the journey for pager attack victims seeking medical care even more difficult. Sheikh Mustafa wasn't alone. Zainab Mastra was injured by a pager as well, and she's no fighter either. She's an interior designer and an event planner. The unprecedented and lawless nature of this attack has unleashed a new uncertain era of warfare for the whole world.
And when you have terror going into the supply chain, it makes people ask the question, what the hell is next?
What now is to stop anyone in the world from booby trapping anything in the supply chain, food products, for example, water, ordinary household devices, any of those can now be used as a booby trap in order to target people that are deemed to be the enemy by any state, by any armed group, by any actor on the planet. And you have to ask yourself, what would drive a state to be so bold in its blatant violation of international law? Impunity of the state of Israel has been guaranteed for 8 decades by the West, the United Kingdom, the United States, Germany, and others. And the product of impunity is always more violations, worse violations, expanding circles of atrocity.
Militarily, these attacks exacted a heavy human toll. But politically, if Israel thought the bombs would fracture loyalties and erode the base of support for Hezbollah in South Lebanon, that seems unchanged. If anything, it appears to have hardened the commitments of those who bore the brunt of the attack.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question which is related to a very significant topic. And I'm speaking, of course, of what are the signs of the Shia or the followers of the Ahlul Bayt? As you know, being a Shia or a follower of the Ahlul Bayt, the household of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, is a virtue. This is indicated by some hadiths which have been mentioned and that allude to this matter. In one beautiful hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, I complained to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam about people's jealousy towards me. So he replied, O Ali alayhi salam, the first four people to enter paradise will be myself, you, Hassan, and Hussein. The rest of our progeny will be behind us. Those who love us will be behind them, and our Shia will be on either side of us. So this hadith, it indicates that being a Shia, being a follower of the Holy Prophet's family, is a virtue. In another beautiful hadith, Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, Umm Salma, the wife of the Prophet, was once asked about the status of Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, to which she replied, I have heard the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam say, verily, Ali and his Shia are the victorious ones. So clearly, being a Shia is a virtue, but like everything, being a Shia has certain criteria, it has certain standards, or you could say it has certain signs. So the question we want to pose today is, what are the signs of a true Shia of the Ahlul Bayt? In order to answer this question, we can take inspiration from some hadiths which have been narrated regarding the subject. In one beautiful hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam asked Nauf al-Bakhali, "Do you know who my Shia are, Nauf?" To which he replied, "By God, no." The Imam alayhi salam replied, "My Shia have parched lips and empty stomachs. They are those whose faces disclose asceticism, for they are ascetics by night, loyans by day." So asceticism or zuhd is one of the signs of the Shia. In another beautiful hadith, Imam Hassan alayhi salam said this in answer to a man who said to him, "Verily, I am one of your Shia." The Imam said, "O Abdullah, if you are truly obedient to us in our commands and prohibitions, then you are telling the truth. But if not, then do not add to your sins by falsely claiming such a dignified position that you are not truly worthy of. Do not say, 'I am one of your Shia,' but rather, 'I am one of your adherents and one of your admirers or lovers and an enemy to your enemies. You are good and aiming towards good.'" So this hadith clearly makes a distinction between a person being a Shia, a true follower of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, and somebody who is fond of them, admires them, and dislikes their enemies, but who's not truly a Shia, who doesn't follow their commands. In another beautiful hadith, Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, "Our Shia are none other than those who are consciously wary of their duty to God and who obey Him. They are known solely for their humbleness, their humility, their returning promptly whatever is entrusted in their care, and their abundance remembrance of God." Thank you for joining us here on The Key, where we're looking at the signs of the Shia in the light of the hadith of the Infallibles alayhimus salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
to be as true as I can to you. Cause loving you the best I can will always be my number one and only plan. Yes, every day I'll try to be as true as I can to you.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Greetings from Tehran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Thank you for joining us. We start off this hour's programs with Youth Station, a program all about young people and dealing with topics related to youth. Next is Israel Watch. The program critically analyzes Zionist media reports about the current events and issues in the West Asia region. That will be followed by Back to Reality. In this roundtable discussion, young Muslims are invited to discuss some pertinent religious and social issues of today's Islamic world. Our varied radio productions feature will be next.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم dear listeners, welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. This is Arabic English Radio. I'm Asma and
this is Nahid, having the honor of being with you.
Yes, so we are so happy to be in this studio because Youth Station is home, and once we're here that means we're home again. This cozy corner of being in the Youth Station is the most pleasurable thing.
Yeah, exactly.
When I look back into my childhood, I feel so proud of being a member of the Islamic world. You know, it's a blessing that we sometimes forget that it's a blessing. It's a real, real gift.
Yeah, and many times we just take it for granted.
Many times, unfortunately, when you have just as health and other blessings that you have, you don't remember how respectful they are up until you lose it.
Or you see the other people. I mean, when I just entered the school as a teacher and I saw the students who, this is like really beautiful, fortunately, I could see the students who love the religion and I could see how they are defending the religion. When I saw those people, I thought and I started asking myself, are you being the same person who can defend the religion the way they are? So when I saw those pictures, I started to work on myself even more. Like, our children are aware and they love their faith. So we are the same. But sometimes we are not showing the picture of our religion. And this is a little bit sad.
Yeah. So the thing that we're talking about is Islam and how we see it and how other people would see it.
Yeah.
And why we love it. So let's start from the very first point, from the very first square, from the sandbox.
Yeah.
Like when you're a kid, maybe it's immaterial to you what is religion. But as you grow older, as you become a teenager, then little by little, your questions are going to rise up. They're going to pop up into your head. The first question you're going to ask is, why am I born?
Yeah.
So to answer this question, inevitably, you have to find an anchor. And that anchor, the best anchor that you could find, is God. No matter where you go, how much you search, that's God.
Yeah, and that safe corner in every question that we face.
Yes.
The questions that are hard for us, complicated, we can't find the answers.
So much.
Yeah, and the only place that we can seek refuge at is just getting nearer to Allah.
Yeah,
just,
so you know, I know that in this materialistic world, there are many, many cults and many groups and many, they come and they bring different ideologies, different perspectives of the creator, of the creatures. But then trust me, all the roads are going to lead you into one direction. Yeah. And that direction is God. So in order to get closer to God, you see, it's very, it's much of a delicate and sensitive discussion. Like, because some people would ask, why do you have to have a religion to get close to God? To get this much of closeness with God. But then the answer is, am I potentially having this capability to get close to someone who is the ultimate truth and who is so great and so grave? Do I have this possibility? For sure, as a teenager, no.
Yeah.
Even if I get older, no. Even if I get wiser, no. Because for this greatness, I need a conduit. There must be a mediator. I must have a mediator in between me and him to help me, actually, to show me the way. I actually am not saying that my relationship with God has to have this mediator. Like, I'm not saying that. The chit-chat that we have with God, that's something else. But in order to get closer to him, there's a way. And that way has got gates. And those gates are the infallible imams and the prophet.
Yeah, and with Islam, you can find those ways.
Exactly.
I mean, Islam is the window towards finding those people, those finding the guidance that we are in seek of.
So in today's episode, we're not actually discussing this fact that why Islam? Because after all these episodes, I guess, we already made it clear.
Yeah.
And we came to this conclusion. We believe that. This is at the back of our mind, that everybody who's listening to us has got the same perspective as we have. Like, Islam is the ultimate way of getting closer to God.
Yeah, right.
And Islam is the best religion. And it has completed. You know, we believe that all the religions are one.
Yeah.
And Islam has brought it into its highest peak.
Yeah, and Islam is just the most completed version of the religion that people
have.
Yeah,
and our prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is the last prophet. And after him, there is no prophet who could come and have revelation and all those stories.
Yeah, right.
So the very first fundamental thing that we have got into our brain is that we all believe in Islam as the last and complete version of religion that we have. So now, how do we see it and how we love it? That's the question. We go for a break and then we come back to see it from different perspective.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Well, sometimes you have something so precious and then you do not recognize it until you see the others.
Yeah.
When you're healthy, you cannot see how healthy you are until you see someone who's blind and who wants to cross the street. At that moment, you say, oh, God, thank you for my eyes.
And you know, with Islam, what happens is that it's something in our heart. It's the belief, it's the deep sense in our heart. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget about our actions. I mean, from the outside, worldly speaking, other religions, other people, non-Muslim communities are looking at us. And from the outside, Islam looks something sometimes different to them. Exactly. I mean, unfortunately, those who are less aware when we talk about Islam to them, they have the picture of those isolated people who are not in the society a lot.
And then look at the policies, like Western politicians try to actually bring scratches into the face of Islam by, in what way? In the way that they created ISIS. Yeah. Now, many people, when they look at Islam, they remember ISIS, but ISIS has got nothing to do with
Islam. Yeah, exactly. And they feel like in Islam, women are being oppressed. They are being controlled. And,
yeah, they do not study. They are not educated.
And it's so
sad. They do not go out. They don't have any interaction with the world. But that's totally the reverse.
Exactly. And it's so sad that from the outside, what they think, what they consider as Islam, as something totally wrong.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons, I'm not blaming anyone or anything, but I think the reason is from us. The reason is rooted in us. Those moments that we forget that we have to act based on Islam, I mean, those moments that we forget our responsibility to inform the world of Islam of how life is in this religion, they can be the reasons.
So we're here to bring some perspective.
Yeah.
One of them... The first thing that is very interesting is that if you look at history in Islam, we have never been interested for broadening our territories with war.
Yeah.
The prophet was the prophet of kindness, and he was actually assigned to complete the realm of manners.
Yeah, and
he was the
prophet
of manners. He was so kind. He answered all the misbehaviors with him, all the cruelties that happened to him in his journey with too much of kindness.
And you know, Asma, the best kind of invitation that was done by our prophet was his action.
Exactly.
I mean, sometimes without even saying anything, he could invite people to his religion by just acting the sample of what God has taught him.
So the first thing I'm so proud of is my prophet.
Yeah.
My prophet has always been kind, and he's the symbol of kindness. He's the beloved of God for his behavior, for the way he talked to people, for the way he felt for human beings. Like a prophet crying at the very heart of the night for other people who are hurting him. This is too much.
Yeah.
This is too very much. And then asking God in all the occasions, the only thing that he cares for is the people, the human beings.
Yeah, right.
And he actually does not draw a line. These are my people and the others are the people of the other religions. I don't care for... No, our prophet was kind to Jews, was kind to Christians, to all the human beings. Yeah, there is no single account that tells you our prophet actually created a line border between he himself, his people, and the other people.
Even with those people who were insulting him.
Exactly.
He had that noble character, and he had always advised Muslims to be the same. He says, the best of you is the best of you, the best of Muslims is the best one in character.
Yeah.
He mentions that we have to keep the same character, though we can't be like him, but we can get those features. We can practice
at least
we can those
learn.
Features.
We can practice.
Yeah, people were insulting him in the face, and still, he was the prophet of Allah. He had the power. He could just nag and complain about people to the creator, but he still kept the same noble person.
And he cried for these people who are hurting him.
Yeah, and he wanted
asked
them to be
Allah
saved.
To forgive them.
Yeah.
So this is too much. And the other point about him, about the greatness of our prophet, is that our prophet brought women into the spotlight.
Yeah.
Like, he was the one who helped women be considered as human beings. He was the one. And by the way, there is one thing which is very important. All the infallible imams are coming from his daughter, the daughter of the Prophet.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was a girl who brought all these great and noble imams into this Islamic heritage.
Yeah, it's like after the Prophet, the person who started this tradition of our imams is his daughter. So the daughter is keeping the flag of our Prophet.
Yeah. So this is another greatness of our religion.
Yeah, right.
In no other religion, I don't think there is such a thing like what the Prophet did, caring for women, bringing them into the spotlight, making the world aware of the role of women
and
of the ladies and of the values of women.
Every group of society, once they know the character, once they know how our Prophet was behaving, they realize that this person, this character is respected.
Yeah.
Regardless of the religion.
So another point is equality. Another point that I would want to mention is justice in Islam. You are equal to each other. And the only thing that makes you better than the others is your piety, is how kind and how loyal of an obedient of God you are. These are important facts that you may not find in other religions. And that's why we call Islam as the complete religion of God. And we're proud of it. By the way, only 14 minutes is not going to do the justice to the discussion for why I love my religion and why I love my Prophet and the picture of Islam. But this was just the introduction to some other episodes in Youth Station, which is a very interesting discussion. Yes, I'm a Muslim. And I love my Prophet, and I'm so proud of my religion, because my religion is the religion of dignity, of compassion, and of kindness.
Yeah, our Islam is our voice, our smile, and our walk. So we have to be the beauty of our faith wherever we go. Until the next time, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions, Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Thank you for joining us. The situation in Syria remains the primary focus of Hebrew media after the events in Suwayda, alongside the stalemate in the ongoing negotiations for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and the Israeli dispute surrounding the crisis of drafting the Haredim. We discuss these topics on today's episode with Dr. Mohammed Suwaydan, academic and writer in international affairs, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohammed. Syria remains at the center of Hebrew media attention as Israeli analysts and commentators express their views about what has happened and what may happen in Syria. Some of them call for no agreements to be made with President Shara, whom they described as Julani. Why would some Israelis do not want to normalize with Syria, despite the Syrians' gesture towards the Israelis? Is it because of what happened with the Jews, or there are other reasons?
First of all, it's important to emphasize that I think it's one of the rare moments in history where a certain country wants to normalize relations with another one,
yeah.
while the other one is always bombing it and occupying its land. So the whole situation is really weird in this case. But the reason is mainly it's not about Druze. Israel doesn't care about Druze.
Yes.
It doesn't care about anyone. It only
it's using
cares,
it as a pretext.
Exactly. It only cares about its own interests.
Okay.
But who doesn't want to normalize with Israel? With Syria is all of Israel. It's not the only some analysts, even Netanyahu, even the cabinet, doesn't prefer normalizing with
Syria. But I don't understand
Syria.
Why, Dr. Muhammad.
It's mainly
as you highlighted, it's a good gesture. Maybe that will is it because they will not be able to expand the buffer zone, as the commentator
yes.
highlighted, a few kilometers front.
It's for several reasons. So it's reason number one, it's because Israel will always search for a reason to expand its territory. So part of expanding its territory is inside of Syria, especially in the south of Syria, since it's the border with
okay.
occupied Palestine.
Okay.
So it doesn't need to, Israel doesn't need to go to an agreement with Syria that forbids it from occupying parts of Syria,
okay.
number one. And number two, it's because Israel doesn't trust the people today in power in Syria. It also views them as militias, terrorists, that may at a certain point return to having some operations against Israel. So it doesn't trust them. So what it needs, what it's emphasizing for,
mm-hmm.
is a normalization agreement with Syria,
okay.
but giving it a lot of its interests. Part of them was the Golan Heights. Part of them was the south, all the south of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Part of them not having Turkey, some military bases inside of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mainly like having returning colonialism over Syria.
Yes.
Israel is having it at occupying parts of it.
Okay, but again, they have a golden chance to be allies against Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And taking into consideration also that Al-Qaeda and ISIS never hit Israel.
Yes,
it's kind of confusing when it comes to that.
It's true, but it's not. This is not how Israel thinks. Netanyahu have always spoken about, and he said it in his books, that in relations with the Arab states, only power is the language to use. So they don't believe in the language of peace. They don't believe in the language
because obviously they want to expand. That's only
exactly.
That's the only case they're seeing.
They want to return for the greater Israel, which Syria is part of. So normalizing maybe blocks this. This plan, so they need to expand every phase alone. That's why they prefer to still use power. They think that when they use power, when they destroy the Syrians' military bases, then they will force Syrians towards normalization in the conditions they prefer most.
Yes, okay. What the Israeli entity wants in Syria is only to entrench the occupation of southern Syria and turn it into a demilitarized zone. Everything said about protecting the Jews in Suwayda or elsewhere is meaningless, according to the former deputy chief of staff of the Israeli army. Doesn't such remarks divide or to dissect Syria? It's very painful, and it's like that's exactly what many analysts are analyzing. That's the plan that they're going towards. And now speaking, looking at this report,
you know,
that.
The ironic thing is that nothing is hidden. If you read Israeli official statements, if you read Israeli books from the establishment of Israel in 1948 till now, and if you read these since the beginning of the 20th century, when the idea of creating Israel, establishing Israel was negotiated, since that point, everyone spoke about the greater Israel. Everyone spoke about how Israel has a plan to divide the countries near it. And everyone speaks about how Israel always wants to occupy new lands. So it's all written. Nothing is hidden. It's all written that Israel has no allies. Israel has no friends. Israel doesn't care about anyone in the region, rather than its own interests. And Israel will continue working on dividing the countries in the region,
so they can
and occupying
expand.
Exactly, and occupying the lands of the countries in the region. So this is written.
But seemingly, Turkey shares the same interest.
You know, the difference between Turkey and Syria is that Turkey is a regional power that has a long history in the region. It's a country that has its own land, its own history, and everything. Israel is an entity which was created in order to expand.
Mm.
So we have a huge difference between Israel and Turkey.